Chapter 44. Mr. Airedale stood in the widow's parlor with the door key in his hand, gazing by turns at Mr. Chester, and at Gabriel Varden, and occasionally glancing downward at the key as in the hope that of its own accord it would unlock the mystery, until Mr. Chester, putting on his hat and gloves, and sweetly inquiring whether they were walking in the same direction, recalled him to himself. No, apostrophe, he said. Our roads diverge widely, as you know. For the present, I shall remain here. Apostrophe, you will be hipped, Airedale. You will be miserable, melancholy, utterly wretched. Apostrophe, returned the other. It's a place of the very last description for a man of your temper. I know it will make you very miserable. Apostrophe, let it, apostrophe, said Mr. Airedale, sitting down, and thrive upon the thought. Good night. Apostrophe, feigning to be wholly unconscious of the abrupt wave of the hand which rendered this farewell tantamount to a dismissal, Mr. Chester retorted with a bland and heartfelt benediction, and inquired of Gabriel in what direction he was going. Yours, sir, would be too much honor for the like of me, apostrophe, replied the locksmith, hesitating. I wish you to remain here a little while, Varden, apostrophe, said Mr. Airedale, without looking towards them. I have a word or two to say to you. Apostrophe, I will not intrude upon your conference another moment, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester with inconceivable politeness. May it be satisfactory to you both. God bless you. Apostrophe, so saying, and bestowing upon the locksmith a most refulgent smile, he left them. A deplorably constituted creature, that rugged person, apostrophe, he said, as he walked along the street, he is an atrocity that carries its own punishment along with it, a bear that gnaws himself. And here is one of the inestimable advantages of having a perfect command over one's inclinations. I have been tempted in these two short interviews to draw upon that fellow 50 times. 5 men in 6 would have yielded to the impulse. By suppressing mine, I wound him deeper and more keenly than if I were the best swordsman in all Europe, and he the worst. You are the wise man's very last resource, apostrophe, he said, tapping the hilt of his weapon. We can but appeal to you when all else is said and done. To come to you before, and thereby spare our adversaries so much, is a barbarian mode of warfare, quite unworthy of any man with the remotest pretensions to delicacy of feeling, or refinement. Apostrophe, he smiled so very pleasantly as he communed with himself after this manner, that a beggar was emboldened to follow for alms, and to dog his footsteps for some distance. He was gratified by the circumstance, feeling it complimentary to his power of feature, and as a reward suffered the man to follow him until he called a chair, when he graciously dismissed him with a fervent blessing. Which is as easy as cursing, apostrophe, he wisely added, as he took his seat, and more becoming to the face. To Clerkenwell, my good creatures, if you please. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the chairmen were rendered quite vivacious by having such a courteous burden, and to Clerkenwell they went at a fair round trot. Alighting at a certain point he had indicated to them upon the road, and paying them something less than they expected from a fare of such gentle speech, he turned into the street in which the locksmith dwelt, and presently stood beneath the shadow of the Golden Key. Mr. Tappertit, who was hard at work by lamplight, in a corner of the workshop, remained unconscious of his presence until a hand upon his shoulder made him start and turn his head. Industry, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester, is the soul of business, and the keystone of prosperity. Mr. Tappertit, I shall expect you to invite me to dinner when you are Lord Mayor of London. Apostrophe, sir, apostrophe, returned the prentice, laying down his hammer, and rubbing his nose on the back of a very sooty hand, I scorn the Lord Mayor, and everything that belongs to him. We must have another state of society, sir, before you catch me being Lord Mayor. How do you, sir? Apostrophe, the better, Mr. Tappertit, for looking into your ingenuous face once more. I hope you are well. apostrophe, I am as well, sir, apostrophe said Sim, standing up to get nearer to his ear, and whispering hoarsely, as any man can be under the aggravations to which I am exposed. My life's a burden to me. If it wasn't for vengeance, I'd play at pitch and toss with it on the losing hazard. Apostrophe, is Mrs. Varden at home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester. Sir, apostrophe, returned Sim, eyeing him over with a look of concentrated expression, she is. Did you wish to see her? Apostrophe, Mr. Chester nodded. Then come this way, sir, apostrophe, said Sim, wiping his face upon his apron. Follow me, sir. Would you permit me to whisper in your ear, one half a second? Apostrophe, apostrophe, by all means. Apostrophe, Mr. Tappertit raised himself on tiptoe, applied his lips to Mr. Chester's ear, drew back his head without saying anything, looked hard at him, applied them to his ear again, again drew back, and finally whispered the name as Joseph Willet. Hush! I say no more. Apostrophe, having said that much, he beckoned the visitor with a mysterious aspect to follow him to the parlor door, where he announced him in the voice of a gentleman usher. Mr. Chester. Apostrophe, and not Mr. Edward, mind, apostrophe, said Sim, looking into the door again, and adding this by way of postscript in his own person. It's his father. Apostrophe, but do not let his father, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester, advancing hat in hand, as he observed the effect of this last explanatory announcement, do not let his father be any check, or restraint on your domestic occupations, Miss Varden. Apostrophe, oh, now, there, and I always a-saying it, apostrophe, exclaimed Mix, clapping her hands. If he and Benan took Miss Sis for her own daughter. Well, she do look like it, that she do. Only think of that, Mim. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is it possible, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester in his softest tones, that this is Mrs. Varden. I am amazed. That is not your daughter, Mrs. Varden? No, no. Your sister. Apostrophe, my daughter, indeed, sir, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Five. Blushing with great juvenility. Ah, Mrs. Varden! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the visitor. Ah, ma'am, humanity is indeed a happy lot, when we can repeat ourselves in others, and still be young as they. You must allow me to salute you the custom of the country, my dear madam, your daughter too. Apostrophe, Dolly showed some reluctance to perform this ceremony, but was sharply reproved by Mrs. Varden, who insisted on her undergoing it that minute. For pride, she said with great severity, was one of the seven deadly sins, and humility and lowliness of heart were virtues. Wherefore she desired that Dolly would be kissed immediately, on pain of her just displeasure, at the same time giving her to understand that, whatever she saw her mother do, she might safely do herself, without being at the trouble of any reasoning or reflection on the subject which, indeed, was offensive and undutiful, and in direct contravention of the church catechism. Thus admonished, Dolly complied, though by no means willingly, for there was a broad, bold look of admiration in Mr. Chester's face, refined and polished, though it sought to be, which distressed her very much. As she stood with downcast eyes, not liking to look up and meet his, he gazed upon her with an approving air, and then turned to her mother. My friend Gabriel, whose acquaintance I only made this very evening, should be a happy man, Mrs. Varden. Apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sighed Mrs. Five, shaking her head. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Mix. Is that the case? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester, compassionately. Dear me! Apostrophe, master has no intentions, sir, apostrophe, murmured Mix as she sidled up to him, but to be as grateful as his natter will let him, for everything he owns which it is in his powers to appreciate. But we never, sir, said Mix, looking sideways at Mrs. Varden, and interlarding her discourse with a sigh, we never know the full value of some wines and fig trees till we lose them. So much the worse, sir, for them as the slighting of them on their consciences, when they're gone to be in full blow elsewhere. Apostrophe and Miss Mix cast up her eyes to signify where that might be. As Mrs. Varden distinctly heard, and was intended to hear, all that Mick said, and as these words appeared to convey in metaphorical terms a presage or foreboding, that she would at some early period droop beneath her trials, and take an easy flight towards the stars, she immediately began to languish, and taking a volume of the manual from a neighboring table, lent her arm upon it, as though she were hope, and that her anchor. Mr. Chester, perceiving this, and seeing how the volume was lettered on the back, took it gently from her hand, and turned the fluttering leaves. My favorite book, dear madam. How often, how very often in his early life, before he can remember this clause was strictly true, have I deduced little easy moral lessons from its pages, for my dear son Ned. You know Ned? Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden at that honor, and a fine affable young gentleman he was. You're a mother, Mrs. Varden, apostrophe said Mr. Chester, taking a pinch of snuff, and you know what I, as a father, feel, when he is praised. He gives me some uneasiness, much uneasiness, he's of a roving nature, ma'am, from flower to flower, from sweet to sweet, but it is the butterfly time of life, and we must not be hard upon such trifling. Apostrophe, he glanced at Dolly. She was attending evidently to what he said. Just what he desired. The only thing I object to in this little trait of Ned's, is, apostrophe said Mr. Chester, apostrophe and the mention of his name reminds me, by the way, that I am about to beg the favor of a minute's talk with you alone. The only thing I object to in it, is, that it does partake of insincerity. Now, however I may attempt to disguise the fact from myself in my affection for Ned, still I always revert to this that, if we are not sincere, we are nothing. Nothing upon earth. Let us be sincere, my dear madam, apostrophe, apostrophe and Protestant, apostrophe murmured Mrs. Varden. Apostrophe and Protestant above all things. Let us be sincere and Protestant, strictly moral, strictly just, though always with a leaning towards mercy, strictly honest, and strictly true, and we gain it as a slight point, certainly, but still it is something tangible. We throw up a groundwork and foundation, so to speak, of goodness, on which we may afterwards erect some worthy superstructure. Apostrophe, now, to be sure, Mrs. Varden thought, here is a perfect character. Here is a meek, righteous, thoroughgoing Christian, who, having mastered all these qualities, so difficult of attainment, who, having dropped a pinch of salt on the tails of all the cardinal virtues, and caught them every one, makes light of their possession, and pants for more morality. For the good woman never doubted, as many good men and women never do, that this slighting kind of profession, this setting so little store by great matters, this seeming to say, I am not proud, I am what you hear, but I consider myself no better than other people, let us change the subject, pray was perfectly genuine and true. He so contrived it, and said it in that way, that it appeared to have been forced from him, and its effect was marvelous. Aware of the impression he had made, few men were quicker than he at such discoveries. Mr. Chester followed up the blow by propounding certain virtuous maxims, somewhat vague and general in their nature, doubtless, and occasionally partaking of the character of truisms, worn a little out at elbow, but delivered in so charming a voice, and with such uncommon serenity and peace of mind, that they answered as well as the best. Nor is this to be wondered at. For as hollow vessels produce a far more musical sound in falling than those which are substantial, so it will oftentimes be found, that sentiments which have nothing in them make the loudest ringing in the world, and are the most relished. Mr. Chester, with the volume gently extended in one hand, and with the other planted lightly on his breast, talked to them in the most delicious manner possible, and quite enchanted all his hearers, notwithstanding their conflicting interests and thoughts. Even Dolly, who, between his keen regards and her eyeing over by Mr. Tappertit, was put quite out of countenance, could not help owning within herself that he was the sweetest spoken gentleman she had ever seen. Even Miss Mix, who was divided between admiration of Mr. Chester and a mortal jealousy of her young mistress, had sufficient leisure to be propitiated. Even Mr. Tappertit, though occupied as we have seen in gazing at his heart's delight, could not wholly divert his thoughts from the voice of the other charmer. Mrs. Varden, to her own private thinking, had never been so improved in all her life, and when Mr. Chester, rising and craving permission to speak with her apart, took her by the hand, and led her at arm's length upstairs to the best sitting room, she almost deemed him something more than human. "Dear madam," apostrophe he said, pressing her hand delicately to his lips, "be seated." Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden called up quite a courtly air, and became seated. "You guess my object?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chester, drawing a chair towards her. "You divine my purpose? I am an affectionate parent, my dear Mrs. Varden." Apostrophe, that I am sure you are, sir, apostrophe, said Mrs. Five. "Thank you," apostrophe returned Mr. Chester, tapping his snuffbox lid. "Heavy moral responsibilities rest with parents, Mrs. Varden." Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden slightly raised her hands, shook her head, and looked at the ground, as though she saw straight through the globe, out at the other end, and into the immensity of space beyond. "I may confide in you," apostrophe said Mr. Chester, without reserve. "I love my son, ma'am, dearly, and loving him as I do, I would save him from working certain misery. You know of his attachment to Miss Airedale. You have abetted him in it, and very kind of you, it was to do so. I am deeply obliged to you, most deeply obliged to you for your interest in his behalf. But my dear ma'am, it is a mistaken one, I do assure you." Apostrophe, Mrs. Varden stammered, that she was sorry, apostrophe, sorry, my dear ma'am, apostrophe, he interposed. "Never be sorry for what is so very amiable, so very good in intention, so perfectly like yourself. But there are grave and weighty reasons, pressing family considerations, and apart even from these, points of religious." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.